and the kids still grow up and fuck up, and the parents still worry about them until all their hair falls out. Stacy watched her, listening, moving her chin around in tiny circles, fluidly, like she was hearing soft music. "Or I don't find the kids at all," said Vega, quieter. "And you know what that's like. And either way, anyway, you've got scraps. My mother never got more than 4 hours of sleep at a time because she was so amped up with worry that something would happen to me and my brother. It was like her religion. And then she died when she was 41. Vega's injuries started a little marching band, throbs and beats. Forehead, cheek, knees. Everything hurt. All her skin hot, like it had been grazed by an oil fire.
"Was it suicide?" said Stacy.
"No, cancer." Stacy nodded, but it wasn't pity or sympathy. Vega had seen many of those nods, the glistening eyes and Halloween mask frowns. This nod was her seeing all the layers at once. Copy that. Vega looked down at her hands through blurry eyes, and they appeared to be vibrating in her lap, shaking. Stacy stood up from the couch.
"When Ashley was 3 or 4, she used to say, 'I hate you, Mommy.' Back then, I'd get all out of shape about it. I'd yell at her and send her to her room and get all wrinkled. But now when I think of it, when I think of her face..."
Stacy cupped her hand in the air in front of her.
"I know she didn't mean it. She was doing it just to see what I would do. I was like her lab rat. She was trying to figure us out. What makes us sad, what makes us happy. She figured it out, too. Always the same answer."
She lowered her hands to her sides, rubbing the fabric of her dress between her fingers.
"I'll get the pictures," she said.
She started to leave the room and then paused in the doorway, craned her head over her shoulder to speak.
"I don't think your mother worrying about you gave her cancer."
Then she left. Vega wiped tears from her cheeks, forgetting about the raw skin, and twitched at the pain. Her breath was choppy, a washboard in her throat. She fumbled for her phone in her inside pocket and skimmed over about 20 texts. She tapped her brother's name. His read, "Saw you on TV. Kick all kinds of ass. Sideways, winky face." Vega smiled, and that hurt her face too, and she wrote back, "Shut up." There was also one from her father, but she skipped it. Went straight to Caps.
"Can your guy get financials on Toby and Erica McKenna quick?"
"Probably. Why?" she typed back. While she waited for his response, she sent an email to the bastard. And then Cap's text came back.
"I think they have too much money and look too good."
She was about to write him back when Stacy returned holding an orange shoebox. She sat on the couch and placed the box on the low table between them. She didn't open it right away.
"This has pictures from ballet class, I think," she said. "You can take them with you if you want."
"Are you sure?" said Vega.
"I can look at them here."
"I can't," said Stacy.
"Please take them. You can bring them back."
She ground and snapped her teeth in the front now, incisors on incisors. Vega stared at them, glowing white.
"You have really nice teeth," she said. "I should," Stacy said, a laugh crowding her throat. "They're all crowns, every one of them. My ex paid for those, too. I wear these mouth guards at night. Used to just wear one up top, but I chewed through it like a dog. So now I wear top and bottom.
She continued to talk about the mouth guards, how she put them in the dishwasher once, and then her ex-husband paid for replacements. And she hadn't felt silly because the dentist told her the mouth guards were silicone, so why shouldn't you be able to put them in the dishwasher? It seemed to calm her, talking about the teeth. So Vega spaced out a little and tried to remember something from Ashley's file.
I'm sorry, what does your ex do for a living again? She said.
He's a floor manager at a Game On down in Philly.
He's done that a while?
Yeah, about 10 years, I guess.
Vega leaned forward, tried to get deeper into the blackness of Stacy's eyes, searching.
You have a nice home, she said, and nice teeth. Does your ex make that much money at Game On?
That's sporting goods, I'm guessing.
Oh, no way, said Stacy, unoffended. He had this aunt I never heard of, died and left him a wad of cash a couple of years ago, and he felt guilty, you know. Only thing that worked out the last 4 years.
Vega thought of the impalpable entity that was a wire transfer. Imaginary money rattling through an imaginary pneumatic tube in the sky. Her phone buzzed and kept buzzing against her ribs as she watched Stacy's mouth moving, showing off the crowns, flawless and counterfeit. Cap paced. Didn't realize he was pacing, alone in Junior's office. He was aware he was talking to himself aloud, but only with words here and there, fragments of thoughts, sometimes his tongue suctioning air off the backboard of his teeth. Finally, Vega's message came through. He read it once quickly, eyes jumping to the numbers. He tapped the screen to zoom, then realized he had to see the whole thing at once. He went around Junior's desk and pressed the space bar and got a prompt for the login and password. Then to the door, and stuck his head out, saw Junior at the end of the hall talking to Rawls and called to him. Junior jogged to him.
I need your password, said Cap.
Why?
Said Junior, immediately defensive. Cap stared at him.
I'd like to download some pornography.
Oh, mature.
Junior came to the desk, typed in his password, and got out of the way. Cap found the email from Vega and blew it up on the screen.
Take a look at this, he said.
Junior looked.
What is this, financial records?
Yeah, Sydney McKenna's parents' checking account.
Don't you need a subpoena for that?
You do, said Cap.
I don't.
Cap put his finger on the screen, said,
This is from a year ago. Almost a year exactly after Sydney disappeared. Look at that. $150K, said Junior. Isn't he a cab driver?
He was. A year ago. Now they run their own car service.
Cap scrolled down the page and hit the screen lightly with his fist.
Look at that, he said slowly. 1 week after the wire, 40 goes to Lincoln Central in Harrisburg. That's enough for a sedan outright and down payments on, what, 4 or 5 others?
He kept scrolling, looking for big numbers. He saw a cluster of them, and he and Junior both leaned in as close as they could without the figures blurring.
Doctors, said Junior. I will bet you my car those are plastic surgeons. He's got new eyes, she's got a new nose. You'll find tanning salons on there, too. Personal trainers, gyms.
Junior listened to all of it, said,
Your car's a piece of shit.
Then he stood up straight, stretched his arms behind his back.
So you think they sold their kids so they could get cars and tans?
Not really, said Cap. But this is something. And they themselves, it's strange. Like, they had no problem being here. Like, they expected to be here. Maybe they just want to help. Yes, maybe. Or maybe they feel guilty about something. They haven't asked how much longer they'll be here. Haven't asked for a lawyer. They're still here, said Junior. It's almost midnight. I know. I was waiting for this from Vega's guy, Cap said, pointing at the screen.
Junior wiped his mouth a number of times.
So, potentially, they're just nice Christian folks who happen to experience a windfall and we're holding them hostage, he said. They're not under arrest, said Cap. And what if that money is related, in some way, to Sydney?
Cap watched Junior ruminate.
The ruminations of Junior, he thought, alternately abashed and sniffing whatever blood may have leaked into the water. You want to talk to them with me? Cap asked him.
Junior didn't have to think about it anymore.
Let's go.
Stacy handed the box to Vega at the door, pushed it against her body. Vega took it, and Stacy let it go and stepped back and away slowly like she was in space, floating, hands outstretched with gnarled knuckles, without her realizing it. Then she brought them down to her sides, gripping the skirt of her dress.
You can bring them back whenever, she said.
Within the next few days, I promise. Vega thought she probably hadn't said the words, I promise, since she was a kid, linking pinkies at recess. There was some heaviness to it she hadn't expected as she watched Stacy drift back to her planet of squares and mouthguards.
Whenever, said Stacy.
They said goodbye, didn't shake hands, and then Stacy shut the door and locked it while Vega stood there. She waited a minute in case Stacy came back out. She didn't, so Vega left, got in the car and dropped the shoebox on the passenger seat, eager to no longer be holding it. She put her hands on the wheel and avoided looking at her own eyes in the rear view because, at this point, the emotions were so varied and numerous she was sure she'd be able to see them as swirling pinwheels in her irises. She was sure it would make her dizzy. Then her phone buzzed, and she let her breath out, hadn't realized she'd been storing it. Cap was calling. The relief from seeing his name almost made her laugh out loud. She put a bud in her ear and said hello.
Hey, he said, can you talk?
Yes, she said, starting the car. Just leaving Stacy Gibbons.
You get any breaks? He asked,
breath choppy, like he was walking.
Nothing with ballet class. But her ex-husband, Ashley's father, inherited a chunk of money from a dead aunt 2 years ago.
Really? Said Cap.
Vega could tell he had stopped walking.
That's what he told Stacy.
What did my guy get on the McKennas? I didn't have a chance to look.
A wire transfer. $150K a year ago. They're still here. Junior and I are about to go in.
We've got to talk to Ashley's father.
Not now, said Cap. He's in Philly, and it's late. You should come back. Can your guy track the account the money came from?
Probably. I bet the Fed and his boss could, too.
They're dealing with the equipment distributor, said Cap.
Then he paused.
What do you think?
Doesn't fit, said Vega, speeding on an empty county road. None of these people strike me as the human trafficking type.
No, said Cap. So is it a better or worse story than that?
You asking me?
If you have the answer, sure.
I don't have anything, she said, and she could hear how tired she sounded in the words, her voice breaking on the last. You should get in there. You'll know in a minute if they're hiding something.
Yes, I think we will, said Cap, sounding distracted. Look, drive safe, but hurry.
Vega nodded to herself in the mirror.
Yeah, see you soon.
She hung up, pulled out the earbud.
She merged with a line of cars heading toward the on-ramp of the state route and thought about the money. $150,000 plus probably another $150,000 makes an even three. No missing person's situation was less shitty when money was involved. It only meant things were worse, not better. Big, 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 big bad, Vega either thought or said aloud. She wasn't sure. One big for every zero.
Chapter 18. Toby McKenna was standing with his broad back to the door at first, hands in his pockets, head down. Erica sat in the chair, holding her purse in her lap. Neither of them was doing anything with their phones. When they heard and saw Cap'n Junior, Toby turned around and Erica sat up straight. Cap introduced Junior and they shook hands.
I'm sorry. You think we might be able to finish this tomorrow?
Said Toby. So excruciatingly polite, it made Cap a little angry. Why aren't they indignant? Vengeful, filled with rage.
It's getting late, he said, placing a hand on his wife's shoulder.
She blinked in gentle surprise.
Yes, of course, said Cap. I apologize for the delay here. Captain Hollows and I just wanted to cover one more base with you, and then that's it. We really can't stress enough how helpful you've been.
They smiled. Toby remained standing behind his wife.
Captain Hollows, Cap said,
nodding to him.
You know, I have to tell you, I've been over the file, your file, a few times, Junior said to them, and I just didn't recognize you folks.
His regional accent seemed to get thicker as he spoke, and Cap thought he better watch it, not get too hometown PA. People can sense when they're being patronized.
You both look like $1 million, honestly, said Junior.
Toby smiled and fiddled with his glasses. Erica looked down, not exactly smiling, but like she was thinking about it.
Why?
Junior began, then stopped. He waited until they both looked at him, second-guessing themselves. Had he already asked the question and we didn't hear it?
Asshole had a good strategy, thought Cap.
Then he finished his question.
Do you look so good?
The McKenna's smiles dissipated. They glanced at each other, then at Cap and Junior.
Pardon?
Said Toby, still no trace of impatience.
You folks have been through arguably the worst thing two people can go through only 2 years ago, and you look like you just stepped out of an L.L. Bean catalog.
Junior paused.
And you didn't used to look like that. I've seen the photos in your file.
Erica wiggled her nose like the witch from the old TV show. But this wasn't a spell. It was a precursor to crying. She touched the corner of one eye with the pad of her manicured ring finger. And that's what put the anger, or at least irritation, in Toby McKenna, his wife upset. He stared at them with his brow lowered, his teeth in an underbite.
The police have a problem with people improving themselves, he said. No, Mr. McKenna, said Cap. We just want to know where you got the money for all of it. Cosmetic enhancements and a fleet of luxury sedans.
Cap knew it could play either way. Either they break, and there are more tears and jumbled confessions, or they're angry. Really, genuinely angry. And Toby would take off his glasses and blazer and show Cap and Junior what he learned in Ultimate Fitness class.
It's not anybody's business, said Toby, how we make money. That would be true with the average couple, said Junior, but you two aren't average because of what happened to your daughter. So, together, these two unaverage things have become a set, Cap picked up, as things that are possibly connected.
Toby rubbed his chin, then his cheek, wiping off a smudge he couldn't quite locate.
I don't know what you think is the truth, he said, but you're wrong. Then why don't you tell us the truth,
said Cap softly, trying not to sound too desperate. Please. Toby shook his head then, but it seemed to be in response to something he was telling himself. He opened his mouth to speak, but Erica cut him off.
They are connected, she said, as if they were all so dense, and she felt sorry for them. Just not the way you think.
Vega pulled off for gas at a rest stop. After she filled the tank, she parked in the lot and read the latest emails from the bastard, along with a PDF of Colin Cahill's bank statements for the past 2 years. The bastard had circled a number. $150,000 deposited almost 2 years to the day since Ashley disappeared. Vega opened a chat with the bastard. Can you track the accounts that wired the money to Cahill and the McKennas? She wrote. He wrote back, they're both burner accounts, like a burner cell. Use them once, then toss. So, no names, Vega typed back. No, offshore through Panama. Not unusual. I can get into the bank for current accounts, but not for ones that don't exist anymore. No way to tell if both accounts belong to same user? Wrote Vega. Not really. Can keep looking. Give it 30 more minutes, then drop it. She signed off, closed her laptop, and slid it to the passenger seat, where it flipped Stacy's shoebox to the floor. The top was off, pictures and papers fanned out on the black liner mat. Vega sighed and started the car. Just drive, she thought. Pick them up when you get to Denville. She squinted at them, could barely make out the images of little girls twirling pirouettes. She had the uncanny feeling she could not leave them there. What do you believe now, she scolded herself, that Ashley Cahill's soul is in those pictures, and you're disrespecting it by leaving images of her on the floor of a rental car? She didn't quite say yes, but the answer wasn't no either. She leaned down sideways, could feel all the muscles in her left hip stretch as she scooped up the box and pictures, grabbed the last one left on the floor, the edge under her fingernails, and glanced at it before dropping it in the box. Ashley at the bar, two other girls behind her, holding it with their left hands, right arms extended, their faces serious and shiny, reflecting the light. They were in the right side of the frame. In the left, slightly backgrounded, was an upright piano, and the piano player in a three-quarter profile. A fair-haired woman with a strong jawline, delicate long fingers over the keys, concentrating on the sheet music, as if the girls weren't even there. Vega brought the picture closer to her eyes. It was printed on paper, a thick stock but matte, and a little pixelated. Maybe if she had the file on her laptop or her phone, she'd be able to see it more clearly, to make out every high-resolution detail of the piano player's face, but she didn't need to, because she knew who it was. Even with the dulled color of whatever second-hand laser printer had produced it, she knew exactly who it was. Cap felt his phone buzz, over and over on his hip in his pants pocket. He reached for the power button and pushed it with his thumb. His teeth chattered from the sugar, the sweat a cold glaze on his forehead. He didn't feel nervous. But Erica McKenna was about to tell them something, and his body was preparing for it, like pulling the ripcord on a toy race car. This is the truth, Erica said. She removed her glasses and set them in her lap, tapped the bridge of her nose. That year, the year after Sydney. She paused, stretched her neck and closed her eyes, like she was working out a crick. Then she continued quickly, as if she'd thought about it many times. Was the worst year any person could have. If you told us we'd have to go through it again, we'd say we want death instead. And we'd pick the worst kind of death, too. Whatever they do in the Middle East, where they
bury you and throw rocks at your head. We'd take that over living through that first year again. Do you understand?
She said to Cap.
He nodded. So a year ago, $150,000 shows up in our checking account. Toby says it must be a bank mistake. We should go down to our branch and tell them, but I said let's wait a couple of days. You know why I said that?
She was pleased about asking them, like a teacher who can't wait to tell the kids the answer to a question that seems difficult but is really very obvious. She knows they'll all slap their foreheads and make googly eyes. How could we have missed that?
Because the night before I had a talk with God, and I was real angry about things. I told him I was done with him, and done with Toby and the kids, and done with this whole...
She sneered as she searched for the words.
Stupid little life, and he could fucking have it back.
She took a breath, her mouth relaxing.
And next morning I wake up. Toby tells me about the money, and I think maybe that's all he could do right now to make it up to us, but it's a decent start.
She rested a second, folded the glasses in her lap. She was crying. That is, tears were leaking from her eyes, but she was making no sound. She didn't even seem to be breathing.
I'm not dumb, she said firmly. I know God didn't send the wire from heaven. He just pulled some strings, is all.
No one thinks you're dumb, said Cap. But I have to ask, did you consider that whoever sent this money could have something to do with Sydney?
Yeah, sure, we considered it. Then we unconsidered it. Who gives a reverse ransom?
She said, aggravated.
Who knows, said Cap. We have to ask these questions, even if they don't make sense.
So you didn't feel any responsibility at all to report the money to anyone?
Said Junior, a little too harshly.
Hey!
Erica said, pointing at him, ready for a fight. Toby reached over and took his wife's hand, held it.
Listen, he said, quieter than anyone had been so far. We have two other kids. Our boy just now stopped having night terrors. He has regular nightmares, but at least he doesn't get out of his bed and scream. Our daughter still draws Sydney in family pictures.
Now he removed his glasses, pulled out a tail of his shirt, and wiped the lenses.
When we got the money, we said, okay. A little justice after nothing. We're still looking for Sid, he said. We still take the tips. Once a week we talk to the police and the FBI agent who ran the case. But we have other kids. We have to keep living. It's like you can still survive without an arm, right? Or a lung? And that's what we're doing. It'll never be as good as it was, but we have to keep going because we don't want to lose anything else.
He was crying now, tears rushing to the tip of his nose and dripping off the edge until he pinched it.
Are we in trouble?
We didn't steal that money, Toby.
Erica snapped. Then to herself,
we didn't do anything wrong.
Toby brought the heels of his hands to his eyes and sobbed into them. Erica stared at Cap and Junior disgustedly. Like a teacher again, except the one who keeps you after school, pissed and disappointed. Just look at what you did. Vega was 5 miles from Denville. She gave up trying to get Cap on the phone, figured she was going to see him soon enough. At every stoplight, she sent emails to the bastard, opened up tab after tab on the internet, reading. Professional biographies, a wedding announcement, LinkedIn, Facebook, the Patriot News, the Philadelphia Inquirer. Houses bought and sold. The bastard was churning out social media intel as fast as he could type and double-click. But the next layer, the bank statements, the credit reports, the property deeds, would take him some time. An hour or two, which might as well have been days to Vega's mind. houses. Bought and sold. She pulled over and searched her recents on her phone. Pressed a contact. Let it ring. Maggie Shambly picked up after 4.
Hello? Miss Vega?
She said, her voice heavy with sleep.
What's happening?
Hi. Sorry to wake you. Nothing new yet, but do you know if there's a kind of master list of residential properties who buys and sells? Like a chain of custody? Is that public information? Said Maggie, gathering thoughts. Vega pictured her sitting up in bed, putting on a pair of glasses.
Well, when someone applies for a license to alter a property, or a place is up for foreclosure, usually anyone could access that information. But just buying, selling, no. You have to be a licensed broker or representative of the buyer-seller to be able to search a guide like that.
But there is a database like that, with houses bought and sold and the owner's names, Vega said, watching her breath form short, cold puffs.
Sure, hun, there's quite a few.
Can you search by the buyer's name?
Yeah, you can search by name, city, whatever you want. Miss Vega, does this have something to do with the girls?
Maggie said. I think it does, ma'am, said Vega. Can you look up a name for me right now? Maggie said yes, put Vega on mute while she started up her laptop and logged into her account.
Okay, what's the name?
Vega told her. She listened to Maggie type, the definitive tap of the enter key. She stopped typing as she read.
Looks like they really like to buy and sell houses, she said finally. 3 in 7 years.
Vega thanked her and hung up, put the car in drive as her thoughts spun thread after thread. Then she pulled out and punched the gas, houses blurring past, all their garage and porch lights on, and their million tragedies inside. Cap walked out with Junior at 2:15, leaving the skeleton crew behind. M in charge, pounding Red Bulls and watching video footage from the strip mall. Trainer and the Fed and the Fed's boss had gone to their home and hotel to sleep. Only 5 news vans were still outside, reporters leaning against the doors and in camping chairs, cameramen half asleep with their gear propped on their shoulders.
Hey, Cap, any news? One of them called. Captain Hollows, how about an update? Nothing now, guys, said Junior, waving like a politician. Just getting a couple hours sleep.
They fired off a few more questions, to which Junior said,
Tomorrow, guys, tomorrow.
What time are you coming in? Said Cap, as they reached the lot.
Junior looked at his watch, yawning.
7, I guess. We got the feds on the burner account. In the morning, we can go have a chat with Ashley Cahill's father.
Cap nodded, and they said goodnight. And Cap was starting to walk away when he heard Junior call his name. Cap turned, saw that the captain wore a queer expression, like he had drunk a beer too fast and was trying not to burp.
You're really fucking good at this, Junior said to him.
It was earnest and humbled, the burp face. Cap put that in his mental photo album of Junior's unreadable facial expressions. Cap thought of a million gay jokes he could make. Actually, just a couple. Along the lines of, hey, you want to buy me a drink since you're getting so emotional? You know, the way gay guys do. But he didn't. Instead, he said,
So are you, Junior?
Junior nodded, and then they both got in their cars and took off, and Cap headed for home. He was a block away when he realized he hadn't turned his phone back on since talking to the McKennas. He said, shit. Pulled his phone out and pressed the power button, sorted through the mess of his thoughts while the white apple glowed. Erica McKenna was right, ultimately. Who the hell would give a reverse ransom? If not an outright payment for a human being's life, which Cap was sure it wasn't, then why else? A sociopath would never pay out money as retribution. He would feel like he deserved those girls.
So maybe the person who took Ashley Cahill and Sydney McKenna, and maybe the person who still had Kylie, the money man. Maybe he knew he had done the wrong thing and felt bad about it. The only thing stronger than love or hate or fear was guilt. His phone vibrated repeatedly, and Cap watched while the screen filled with texts and missed calls, all from Vega. The texts were all the same message. Call me. He tapped the phone icon next to her name, and then the speaker, and Vega picked up before the first ring went through. Where are you? She said, her lips brushing the mic of her earpiece.
Just left the station, said Cap. What's going on?
Pull over.
What? Why?
Pull over. Let me talk, she said, urgent. Cap pulled over.
Okay, I'm parked. What is it?
There's a picture Stacy Gibbons gave me. Ashley in ballet class. The piano player. Vega paused her telegram speak.
What, Vega? What about the piano player?
Vega let out a small, cool breath. I think it's Lindsay Linsom, Cole Linsom's mother, she said.
What? Really? From Tuesday?
Yes. And I just had Maggie Shambly search a database of homebuyers and sellers. The Linsoms have moved 3 times in the past 7 years. 2 years ago, they lived in Harrisburg. 2 years before that...
Lebanon, said Cap.
Yes, said Vega. You need to call the McKennas and ask if they remember the piano player from Sydney's class.
Okay, said Cap.
He pressed his hand to his forehead, felt like he'd been hit in the face.
What's the narrative here, Vega?
Somehow, the Linsoms meet Evan Marsh, pay him to lure Kylie. He gets cold feet. Cap continued.
One or both of them go to his apartment. They argue.
Cap paused.
They kill him.
Yes. Also, they moved into their current house 2 years ago after selling their house in Hershey, which is halfway between
Harrisburg and Lebanon, said Cap.
Linsom is a partner at a law firm in Harrisburg, so he makes money.
He could be the money man, said Cap.
He looked at his face in the rear view, tired and ghoulishly white. A funhouse spook.
So Lindsay Linsom plays piano for ballet classes, finds the girls, they kidnap them. Where are they? Cap said. I mean, physically, where are they? Where is Kylie?
Vega didn't answer. In the silence, Cap stared at the empty street. The stout houses and shops with skeletal trees lining the streets, firmly stuck in winter. Across the street, a Domino's Pizza, fine wine and spirits. He stared at the wine and spirits sign. Wine. He remembered the billboard for the Sherwood Forest subdivision. Jacuzzis, wine cellars, outdoor grill islands. He heard Junior's voice saying, lawyer got the jury to agree that the wine cellar didn't count as immediate.
Wine cellar, he said, starting the car. Or basement, garage.
Yeah, maybe, said Vega. What about the other two?
I don't know. Where are you?
Rockland, I think.
Follow 54 West. You'll see the signs to their subdivision. Meet me at the entrance.
He started to drive. Started to speed. Do you want to call Trainer? Vega said, strangely tentative. To get some backup? Cap recognized this was a rare kind of attention from her, that this was her being gracious.
No, said Cap, immediate and certain. We call Trainer, the feds, Junior, we risk the media circus.
Cap, she said, almost whispering. What if we're off? Cap held the wheel tight. Imagined he was gripping the wiry starfish that were Vega's hands.
Let's find out, he said. If we're crazy, then we say sorry and leave and get some sleep and talk to Ashley Cahill's father in the morning. But Vega?
Yeah?
We're not, he said softly into the air.
He thought he could hear her catch her breath before she hung up. Cap tapped Erica McKenna's number and apologized for the hour when she picked up. "It's fine, Mr. Kaplan. We're still on the road," she said, sounding only a little resentful, since it was he who put her on the road so late to begin with.
"Right, look, I have just one more question, and then I'll let you go, I promise. I know this is reaching back and sounds pretty random. Was there a piano player in Sydney's ballet class? Do you happen to remember?"
Erica paused. Cap heard the white static of the road. "Piano player," she repeated. "Usually they used an old CD player. Except, you know, now that I think about it, they did have someone for recitals and the rehearsals leading up to them. Do you remember that, Toby?"
Cap couldn't hear Toby's muffled response.
"Yeah, you're right," she answered her husband. "It was a woman, real thin and pretty, looked like she could be a dancer herself."
"The name," said Cap, trying not to rush the natural momentum of Erica's memory. "Do you remember her name?"
"God, what was it?" said Erica, reflective. "I know this sounds weird, but I keep thinking it was some kind of oil, like grapeseed, linseed, something like that."
"Linsome," said Cap, running his hand hard down the back of his neck. "Was it linsome?"
"Yeah, that's it," said Erica, pleased. "Miss Linsome. And her first name was an L, too, right? Like Lily Linsome or something?"
"Lindsay," said Cap, his foot coming off the brake. "Lindsay Linsome."
Erica said a few more things and asked a few more questions, but Cap couldn't really hear her. He said thank you and that he would call her back tomorrow with any news. Then he tapped the red button. He sped up even more, to 55, 60. He didn't know what they would do when they got to the Linsomes. His heart rate climbed, and he thought of the chutes and ladders game. One bad move, and you slide back down to the start. He knew that somewhere close by, Alice Vega had cried with his voice right in her ear. And he knew as soon as he saw her face, he would know what to do.
Chapter 19. Vega pressed her sleeve against one eye while she kept the other on the road. She was still crying and didn't know why anymore. She'd stopped beating the shit out of herself trying to find out because it took too much time. So she drove with blurry eyes and damp sleeves on the streets buckled from the old coal mine where she saw an old mattress on the sidewalk, and then to the neighborhood where there were nail salons and a cheese shop, and then to an undeveloped stretch of land where there was a green and brown field that didn't appear to belong to anyone, no houses there. And then she came to the Sherwood Forest subdivision, the monument sign marking the entrance made of staggered bricks, or more likely foam core boards cut to look like staggered bricks. And there was Cap under a tree, leaning against his car. He waved two fingers at her, and she U-turned and parked next to him. She wiped her eyes one more time and got out.
"Hey," said Cap, "you okay?"
"Yeah," said Vega. "What do you want to do?"
Cap looked toward the houses in the cul-de-sac.
"Walk."
He started to walk, and Vega didn't move. She grabbed the cuff of his jacket sleeve, and he stopped and looked at her, surprised. He didn't pull away.
"Stacy Gibbons reminded me of my mother," she said. "It made me upset."
Cap listened, nodded. She also nodded, agreeing with herself. She let go of his sleeve and patted the skin under her eyes.
"You have more than 10 rounds in that piece of shit antique under your belt?"
Cap smiled.
20.
They began to walk, and it began to snow. Not the real stuff that people had to dig out with shovels, but little twirling flurries. Snow light. It was spinning around them and landed on Vega's hands and face, but she didn't feel it exactly. That is to say, she knew it was supposed to be cold, but she didn't feel the cold when it hit her skin. Maybe because it dissolved so quickly, and maybe because she was just a little bit outside of her body just then. And she didn't look at Cap
but saw him peripherally, and he was with her. They were, both of them, ready and not ready. She felt like she had already done what they were about to do 100 times. Had she? She had to think about it. She had to focus. This was the house. They were right in front of it. All they had to do was go up the narrow path to the door. "What should we do?" she asked Cap. He didn't turn to face her. He blinked against the snow. He nodded his head.
"Ring the doorbell," he said.
She looked at his profile, chin out, nearing something like pride or courage, as if he knew exactly what they were about to find. Vega knew he didn't know a thing, no more than she did. But she realized his being proud or brave, even if it was a trick, was enough for her. And that thought hadn't even rounded itself out in her mind before he started up the path to the Linsome house. The lawn still cut, even if not yet green. Terracotta pots lining the walkway with fresh soil, and care tags stuck inside, ready to produce flowers for the season. She followed, running a bit behind him. Sensor lights came on at their feet as they stepped, ending with the one above the leaded glass door. Cap pressed the bell. Vega held her breath. Glittery flecks crowded her eyes. When no one came, Cap pressed it again. They waited, looked at each other. Then a figure, hazy behind the glass of the door, approached. Cap and Vega stood up straighter. Lindsay Linsome opened the door. She wore a black silk bathrobe and loosely fitting black pajama pants underneath. "Mr. Kaplan, Miss Vega," she said, unsurprised. "You'd like to come in." It was an odd way to open, thought Vega. Telling them what they'd like, and it being the exact truth?
"Yes, Mrs. Linsome," said Cap. "We would."
She held her arm out, presenting the living room, and Cap and Vega walked in. Vega glanced around quickly. Everything appeared to be the same as it had been the other day. The white couches, carpets, the glass steer centerpiece, the upright piano with the table clock on top, ticking away. "You didn't wake me," she said, as if they'd asked her. "I don't sleep any more, to be truthful. Just rest my eyes now and then." She sat on one of the couches. "Would you like to sit?"
"I don't think so," said Cap. "Were you expecting us, ma'am?"
"Expecting someone," she said. "You or police or the FBI. Someone. I thought it might be you. I guessed, actually," she said, holding a finger to her lips, pleased with herself. "I kept telling press we didn't have to worry about you, but I had a feeling about it. I get feelings about things, and I've learned to trust them." She looked up at them, taking them in, nodding to herself, like they were dresses on a pair of mannequins.
"And why were you expecting us?" said Cap.
Vega's neck tightened. She bent her arm like a wing so she'd be able to pull the Springfield more quickly. "You found Bailey this morning," said Mrs. Linsome. "I knew it wouldn't be long. That's what happens, unfortunately, when too many people are involved. Too many chiefs and not enough Indians." Vega made herself breathe now, in and out through the nose. She knew there was something very wrong here, in this house. With this woman. Even someone who had resigned herself to being caught would not be as relaxed, confident. When Mrs. Linsome looked at Cap, Vega peered out of the corner of her eye, trying to see around the room as best she could without turning her head.
"Mrs. Linsome," said Cap, keeping it quiet and civil, "you seem to want to tell us something. Why don't you get that off your chest?
That's kind of you to offer,
she said, sincere.
There's a lot to say, though, and none of us has a lot of time.
What does that mean? Thought Vega.
Why don't we have time?
So, she said, rubbing one palm against the other like she was sanding something.
I knew the girls kept those notebooks in that tree. I'd watched them from the window in the kitchen a dozen times.
Vega imagined Kylie and Cole in the backyard, writing in pink and purple pens. She looked over Kylie's shoulder, saw her circling Evan Marsh's name, his real name.
I'd taken out the page before you came. That's really how it all started, said Mrs. Linsom. Kylie had written Evan's name down. She seemed lost in a dream. And then she looked at Cap and Vega and must have seen their bewilderment. She wasn't what we were looking for, you understand, she said. She's heartier than Cole. Bigger. A mature girl, like a teenager.
Ma'am, said Cap. I'm sorry. You're going to have to back up for us. We're not sure what you mean.
I know what she means, said Vega. Kylie didn't look enough like Cole. Ashley Cahill, Sydney McKenna. They both did. Blonde. Slight. Petite. Young for their ages.
Yes, said Mrs. Linsom.
She nodded to Vega, like she was proud of her.
Yes, that's right. But the opportunity presented itself with Evan Marsh. It felt fated to me. That was the feeling I had. A boy she had met by coincidence happened to have a tragic story and was desperate for money, although not so rare in this town.
So you tracked him down, said Vega.
Yes, said Mrs. Linsom. Not difficult. I found him at the supermarket.
Vega saw them, by the loading dock where she'd talked to Marsh. They go for a walk. Evan looks at her like she's crazy.
He wasn't interested at first. Then he thought about it. He wasn't stupid.
Vega thought of his face changing, softening as he considered the money, the possibility of finding his brother.
He had a need, too, you understand. Also, of course, a conscience.
She shook her head, disappointed.
That was really my mistake. I should have known.
Did you kill him, ma'am? Said Cap.
No,
she said, shifting where she sat, smoothing a robe underneath her.
Evan called and said he needed to talk to us. I could tell from his voice he wanted to go to the police. So Press went to see him.
So your husband killed him, said Cap.
Mrs. Linsom appeared taken aback by the question.
Yes, Mr. Kaplan, he did. He has two guns.
Why is she telling us that? Thought Vega.
None of this was planned, she said, her eyes on some distant point. Well, that's not entirely true. It was planned. I only mean that when we started, we didn't plan on all this damage.
Do you mean death? Said Cap, sounding just a little bit impatient. Is that what you mean when you say damage?
Yes, I suppose. Death. Damage.
So why don't you tell us where Kylie is, ma'am, and then we can talk about what you did and didn't plan on, said Cap.
Vega heard anxiety in his voice. Mrs. Linsom focused on him and smiled rather kindly.
Of course. First, though, Mr. Kaplan,
You should really speak to my husband. He's not as level-headed as I am. Maybe you can reach him. Man to man. Father to father.
Vega thought there must be a window open, or a busted air conditioner unit blasting cold air on her neck. She felt she was about to discover the source of a recurring wound. That thing that you did over and over again, without realizing you were hurting yourself in the same spot. Mrs. Linsom tilted her head, reminded Vega of a raccoon about to hiss, guarding the garbage cans. There's no question these belong to me.
I had a feeling about both of you after you left the other day, she said. You're both famous. You have a lovely daughter, Mr. Kaplan.
Vega didn't move. Didn't want to call attention to the bluff. She knew he was too smart to flinch, but she could see his posture change. Head up, shoulders back, hands near the belt, ready to pull the gun.
She said such sweet things about you on Facebook, Mrs. Linsom said, without a single note of sarcasm. It's like she's your friend, but she respects you also. It's extraordinary. People write parenting books on how to do that using positive discipline. I've read them all.
Vega felt a trickle of liquid on her brow. She wanted badly to touch it, to see if the cut had started bleeding again. Don't do it, she told herself. This is not your body.
They put everything online, teenagers, Mrs. Linsom said, shaking her head. I'm not planning on letting Cole have her own social media accounts, unless I create all her passwords so I can monitor what she posts. It's just not safe.
She shook her head again, eyes momentarily fearful. Where's your husband, Mrs. Linsom? Said Vega. Vega put one hand on the grip of the Springfield, no longer attempting to hide it, pushing back the flap of her jacket so Mrs. Linsom could see it. Mrs. Linsom saw it, but seemed just a little concerned, her light eyebrows barely creased.
You know, he's not always like that, how he was when you met him the other day. Only when he's under a lot of stress and not able to relieve it.
Where is he right now? Said Vega again, placing her hand on the grip.
He went to find you, Mr. Kaplan, said Mrs. Linsom, to talk, man to man, father to father. He's been at your adorable house on Pixley Road for a couple of hours now.
Vega drew the Springfield, pointed it at Mrs. Linsom's left eye as Cap stumbled back two or three steps, losing his balance. Pick up your phone. Call your husband, said Vega, steady. You can tell him I will shoot you in the head if he touches her. If he has already touched her, I'll shoot you anyway. The only way you won't end up getting shot is if he hasn't touched her yet. So you'd best hope for that.
Vega angled her chin in Cap's direction.
Kaplan, move. Go. She didn't turn, but watched the shape of him run from the room, heard the door slam, his steps on the path outside. Mrs. Linsom kept her eyes on Vega, not the gun, which was rare. People tended to stare at the barrel when it was pointed at them. Mrs. Linsom seemed mostly indifferent toward it.
You can't shoot me, she said plainly. You want to know what's happened to Kylie, don't you? You can't know that if I'm dead.
Vega took three steps closer, keeping the Springfield aimed at her eye socket. Now Mrs. Linsome watched the gun. Not real concerned about it.